It is Friday, May 31st, 2013, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Walton Arts Center presents the 13th Annual Art of Wine Festival, Thursday, June 13th through Saturday, the 15th. These three evenings will feature a winemaker's dinner, tastings featuring more than 400 wines from around the world, as well as food from the area's finest restaurants. Art of Wine Festival tickets and more information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
Ahead on Ozarks, Michael Tilley of thecitywire.com discusses recent signs the Arkansas economy is improving. Adams Collins plays inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio and some sounds of a rain-drenched first full day at Wakarusa.
But first, Saturday night at midnight is the deadline for graduating high school students to apply for Arkansas Lottery scholarships if they're hoping to get one for this fall. Shane Broadway, director of the Arkansas Department of Higher Education says many have begun the process.
We've got about 5,000 students who have started an application but have not finished all the way of getting all their information to us, their FAFSAs or their ACT scores. Some of them may be still deciding whether or not they're going to attend college in the fall. And my message to them would be, go ahead and finish your application.
Broadway estimates about 33 to 36,000 students will be awarded scholarships for this fall.
Arkansas House Representative Tim Griffin says he's working with the House Ways and Means Committee to alter the existing tax code. Congressman Griffin says he wants to lower the top tax rate for individuals as well as corporate taxes. He says reduction in rates can be offset by the closing of some loopholes and deductions.
We have put out three discussion drafts to date. One that deals with taxing of financial transactions, one that deals with the taxing of pass-throughs entities, and one that deals with international taxation.
Congressman Griffin says changing the tax code is his top priority and something he thinks can be done with bipartisan support.
A new lockage policy for recreational boaters along the McClellan Kerr Arkansas River Navigation System will be implemented next week. Starting Monday, many of the locks will be closed to recreational boaters between the hours of 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on all days except federal holidays. John Balgavy, Chief of Operations for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Little Rock, says the new lockage policy was developed as part of an overarching national strategy to make the more than 40-year-old locks last longer while federal budgets are on the decline.
We have developed a rec policy which, you know, sort of addresses using the lock less swings on the gate, and also trying to do some more maintenance on it. We put out a draft policy, and we had 8 public workshops, so we got a lot of good public comment about how people use the river. And we tried to our best ability to use that to identify some times when we could actually close the lock to wreck traffic and impact the wreck users the least.
He says of the three distinct groups that use the river system the most, the policy was crafted to keep weekends free of closures for anglers and big boat users. And boaters that traverse the river system are placated with lockage opportunities in the morning and afternoon. The new policy will affect 11 of the 13 locks on the McClellan Kerr system, while Ozark Lock and Trimble Lock near Fort Smith will continue to operate on the reduced schedule of 8 a.m. to noon daily.
Under the same national strategy, those locks, because of their number of commercial lockages, were identified as lower use locks. So we went from full service to reduced service at them. So every day we have a 4-hour closure to all vessels at those two locks. And that's the same way there are 3 locks in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Reach, that are closed 4 hours a day as well. And again, that's to try to accomplish more maintenance given a constrained budget.
Balgavy says while recreational users are a large part of traffic along the Arkansas River system, a study conducted for developing the new lockage policy showed that the new policy would have had an impact on 29 lockages throughout last year at Murray Lock in Little Rock, the busiest lock and dam for recreational traffic in the state.
A round of public meetings in June organized by the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission will examine existing and future water uses and needs in the state for the next 40 years. Edward Swain with the commission says the public can ask questions and make comments on updating what's known as the Arkansas Water Plan. Swain says he feels it's important for the public to be involved and to help the commission with water planning.
So it's our effort in Arkansas to make sure that we're aware of our water issues and that we look forward to make sure that we're going to meet our water needs into the future and that we come up with solutions. The public has a lot of interest in water issues. To make sure that we manage those properly is in everybody's interest.
Swaim says this is the second of four rounds of public meetings. The meetings begin next week in Northwest Arkansas in the Arkansas River Valley. Meetings will be held at 6:30 p.m. June 4th in Fort Smith, 6:30 p.m. June 6th in Harrison, 9 a.m. June 6th in Russellville, and at 3 and 5:30 p.m. on June 11th in Fayetteville.
Two campgrounds on the Buffalo National River will reopen after the National Park Service accepted volunteer agreements with two local organizations. Because this is the third consecutive year that the National Park Service has experienced budget cuts, the park announced earlier this year that several campgrounds would be closed and that maintenance would be scaled back at the park. But with the new volunteer agreements, the Rush Campground near Buffalo Point and South Maumee Campground near Harriet will reopen. According to a press release issued this morning, Park Superintendent Kevin Sherry approved volunteer agreements with the Scenic Highway 14 Association and the Searcy County Chamber of Commerce. The agreements will see the two organizations provide maintenance services such as cleaning fire rings and bathrooms and hauling trash.
Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a rough night at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale last night. They lost to Corpus Christi 5-0. It's the third loss in the series for the Nats, the fifth loss in a row overall for the Nats. The Naturals continue to play at home tonight. They open a three-game series against the San Antonio Missions.
Showers and thunderstorms likely tonight with a 90% chance in northwest Arkansas and an 80% chance in the Arkansas River Valley. Expect lows in the upper 60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a 70% chance of showers in northwest Arkansas and a 90% chance in the Arkansas River Valley. Highs will be in the upper 70s. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows from 53 in northwest Arkansas to 59 in the Arkansas River Valley.
It is the final day of May 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com, Michael Tilley. Thecitywire.com covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire listening area. And how are you on Friday today, Michael?
I am well. I don't think we got near the weather you guys did up there, so the question should go back to you. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. This week, a sign that shows the economy may be improving. Home sales in three of the state's four largest metro areas up, and in some cases, double digits.
Yes, this is, as our economist Jeff Collins notes, I mean, you know, that is it's the canary in the coal mine type factor, and in those four large markets, which is Northwest Arkansas, obviously Northwest Arkansas, Central Arkansas and Jonesboro, the numbers are up. Unfortunately, in Fort Smith, we continue to see it's not that the numbers are way down, it's just that they're down some and they're flat. And it really reflects the employment situation in the Fort Smith area. It's just, you know, the economy is just struggling to hang on. But overall, home sales in those four large markets for the first 4 months of 2013 totaled 5,728, and that's up over 11% compared to 2002. And the value of those homes sold was $936 million. That's up over 15%. So those are very good signs. And, of course, just by way of reminder, the CityWire's home sales report, we look at the state's 14 most populated counties, and that accounts for between 70% and 75% of total Arkansas home sales, which also gives you an idea of how rural Arkansas can be. But home sale, the average sales prices are up in those markets, and we're hearing, especially in Northwest Arkansas, we're hearing these realtors say that this is the best year they've had in 5, 6, 7 years. So if you were waiting around for the economy for clear signs of economic improvement, here you go.
Jobless rates fell in both the Fort Smith metro area and Northwest Arkansas, 5.1% in April for Northwest Arkansas, just a little over 7 in the Fort Smith metro area. And both areas saw gains in the number of workers.
Yes, they did. Again, you know, I don't want to belabor the point, but in Fort Smith, it's still, they saw gains, but they're not improvements even over where we were in April 2012. And so, you know, that's just something that Fort Smith, for example, we just look at the number of employed. The number of employed during April rose compared to March, but it's still almost 1,000 below where it was in April 2012. So that's not obviously not a good thing. But in Northwest Arkansas, I mean, good grief. It's just, you know, it was a 5.1% rate in April, below that. Below the 5.3% in April 2012. In fact, the Northwest Arkansas area was one of the only was the only one of the eight metro areas in or connected to Arkansas to have a jobless rate decrease in April compared to March, and also April compared to last April. Hmm. So that's a good sign. The number of employed there is up considerably. It's up in April. It was a little over 227,000, and compare that to just almost 222,000 in April 2012, almost 5,000 more employed in that metro area in 1 year. So between the housing stats and this labor status, I mean, it's I think the Northwest Arkansas economy is back to its usual tricks.
A week from right now, there will be all sorts of folks from Walmart in Northwest Arkansas for the annual shareholders meeting. Earlier this week, Walmart stores entered a guilty plea to dumping hazardous waste in California, $81 million in fines. What does this mean, if anything, for the shareholders meeting or for the company?
Well, it doesn't. $81 million for you and I, that's, I mean, that's, well, for me at least, I know you make that in a couple weekends.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money to you and I. For Walmart, that is not a lot of money. It was more about the publicity. You know, Walmart has really, the past 4 or 5 years, or if not longer, really been focused on being a sustainability leader and talking about their role to protect the environment. And, you know, these agreements came out. And this was not just a few folks, you know, raising hell and upset about, you know, dumping oil in the backyard. I mean, this case involved 20 prosecutors. It involved 32 environmental groups. And it was an 8-year collection of things that these prosecutors and others found in terms of bad environmental practices. So Walmart settled, and it was just a black eye on Walmart financially in terms of a material impact. I mean, Walmart, it's like you and I hit a speed bump. It's no big deal. They'll move on, but it from a public relations standpoint, they'd probably much rather not have had this.
Finally, on the citywire.com right now is a survey that you and your staff conducted about area schools when it comes to storm shelters. We've been riding out some severe weather for the past couple of weeks. An interesting read by Ryan Saylor.
Well, we were surprised. Thank you. We were surprised that there were so few shelters around. I mean, look at what happened last night. I mean, most of the major tornadic activity or threats of tornadic activity was there in Benton County. Yet in Benton County, you know, the Bentonville and the Rogers School District, they have what are called some safe rooms, but they don't have storm shelters in terms of what FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, determines to be a storm shelter. In the Fort Smith area, there are many schools over in, in East Oklahoma. There are a lot of schools, and we see around in Oklahoma several that have them. And we're, you know, Governor Fallon in Oklahoma has reported that he's going to do more to seek federal grants and try to get local school districts to build some kind of to build some more shelters. But I guess what we were surprised was just so in this. I mean, we're like it or not, we're part of these two metro areas are part of a tornado alley, and we were, like I said, we were somewhat surprised that there were so few facilities, especially in the Benton County area for storm shelters.
You and I are from kind of the same generation. We both went to rural school districts in Arkansas. Did you have a safe room or any sort of tornado drills when you were in school?
It was the hall outside our school room, classroom, typically. Just go out in the hall and, you know, get down in a crouching position, put your hand over your head. That was our safe room, typically. And, you know, at the house where I grew up, we had a tornado shelter. Bill thought, you know, it faced the entrance faced the east, you know, mm-hmm. faced away from where the tornado would, I mean, it was built up. It was nice. We never had to use it, fortunately, thankfully, but we had, and a lot of our neighbors did, but not in our school districts, no, sir.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, and more for the entire listening area. Michael, I'll be gone the next couple of weeks. You'll be talking to Antoinette Grajeda. I'll talk to you in mid-June.
All right. Have a good and safe trip.
Thank you.
Child musical prodigy turned film composer extraordinaire. That's Austrian composer Erich Wolfgang Korngold. He wrote only one symphony, and that was in 1952, his symphony in F sharp. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony from 7 to 9 p.m. Sunday nights right here on KUAF Public Radio. Join me for Korngold's Symphony in F-sharp, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, led by Andre Previn. That's coming up Sunday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on KUAF Public Radio.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, Adams Collins returns to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. He and his band will kick off the Mountain Street Music Series at the Fayetteville Public Library on Sunday afternoon. Again, this year, we'll have previews of each of those June free concerts at the library. And our first one will be Adams Collins later on this edition of Ozarks at Large. Nearly 40 families and individuals affected by a major tar sands oil pipeline rupture 2 months ago in the small town of Mayflower, Arkansas, it's about 25 miles northwest of Little Rock, have now filed a lawsuit against ExxonMobil Pipeline. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with an attorney on the case, and she gives us this status report.
The lawsuit alleging human health effects, environmental damage, and loss of property was filed in the Circuit Court of Faulkner County by the Alabama law firm Harwin, Newell, and Newton on behalf of an estimated 85 residents affected by the Pegasus oil pipeline breach. Attorney Sean Daniels manages Arkansas cases for the law firm and has spent time at the oil spill site.
I mean, all you saw basically was an incredible number of trucks and traffic and vehicles and security people and you know, obviously the smell is one of the first things you notice when you get in the area.
The pipeline rupture, measuring 22 feet long and 2 inches wide, leaked an estimated 10,000 barrels or 420,000 gallons of dilbit or diluted bitumen. Bitumen's a thick tar-like substance extracted from Canadian tar sands preserves. The Pegasus pipeline, constructed in the late 1940s, originally carried finished crude oil from Texas refineries up to the Midwest, but the line was reversed in 2006 to transport Canadian tar sands oil to Texas for refining into diesel products. According to the U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, the suit cites, reversing the flow can stress pipes. The suit also says defendants were aware that tar sands oil tends to be more abrasive and posed certain risks to the aging pipeline infrastructure.
We don't have the metallurgy report back yet, but it's looking more and more like this was a seam failure, which is what you would expect when you have a pipeline that's, you know, under too much pressure.
The complaint alleges that cleanup efforts have failed to capture all the spilled toxic crude, with thousands of gallons still present in the ground, groundwater, and affected structures. An undetermined amount of oil has also drained into a nearby cove adjacent to Lake Conway, a tributary to the Arkansas River.
Part of it, too, was there was some pretty heavy rain that occurred between the spill and within a few days of the spill, which pushed it, you know, of course, further out. And then the residents have told us that one of the first things Exxon did was power wash the oil down into a drainage ditch to collect it then. Well, the first, you know, obviously that gets it out of sight, but it's also moving the oil from one area to another. It spreads it further, and some of the information we're getting now is that some of the oils even got into the conduit system and spread it throughout the subdivision and beyond. But we know from some of the testing that's been done by third parties that not only in the cove, but the cove which is connected to Lake Conway, that the presence of benzene has been detected.
Unlike refined crude oil, which floats on water, heavy oil sinks in water, so it's not easily contained or absorbed. Short-term exposure to crude oil from primary contact and breathing of fumes may cause dizziness, nausea, blurred vision, and headache. Crude oil contains neurotoxins, which affect brain function. The suit also says that benzene, a chemical component of dilute bitumen, has been detected in the lake. Benzene is a known carcinogen.
You know, the people in the affected subdivisions in close proximity to the rupture, you know, they were immediately having nausea, headaches, you know, the typical physical symptoms that you see from exposure to these chemicals. We haven't been getting those reports yet from the folks at the Cove and then Lake Conway, and it may just be that by the time it's gotten to that point, it's not as concentrated.
This is not a closed suit, and each claim will be handled individually, not as a class.
Yeah, absolutely. We are. It is not closed. We will continue to add clients as we get them, and we've had a few call recently and wanted to join.
Listed among the defendants are ExxonMobil Pipeline Company, based in Houston, Texas, and ExxonMobil Corporation, which responded via email saying they were aware of the lawsuit but had not yet had a chance to review, so would not comment. Harold Satterfield, who developed and sold the Northwood subdivision in Mayflower, and an associated surveyor, are listed for failing to disclose to residents that the Pegasus oil pipeline was buried just a few feet underground in that district. The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial to be heard in Faulkner County. In early May, ExxonMobil Corporation provided property owners in the Northwood subdivision a 38-page proposal for either purchasing their homes or providing some compensation as a result of the company's pipeline rupture and spill. No compensation, however, was offered to any residents living downstream. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, who set up a toll-free hotline for concerned citizens earlier this month, is conducting his own investigation, and a class action lawsuit was filed in federal court in Little Rock in early April, seeking a reported $5 million in damages. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Washington Regional Hospice's 22nd Annual Garden Party is June 22nd from 6 to 11 p.m. at the home of Julie and Greg Oak Hill in Fayetteville. This Caribbean Nights fundraiser will include live music, food, beverages, auctions, and more. 444-9888 for tickets or wregional.com/garden-party for more information.
It is Friday, the final day of May. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
How are you?
I'm all right. You?
I'm all right. Well, I really like the lead to the story that I wrote on this topic, so I'm going to say it.
Okay.
It fell to the women then. It falls to the women now.
I know what you're talking about because you've told me about this sort of quote before.
On May 25th, 1872, the Fayetteville Weekly Democrat published a story called The Dead. And they were talking about the fact that Union soldiers were preparing to decorate the graves of their dead for Memorial Day, but there was no place for Confederate soldiers. And a lot of the Confederate soldiers, of course, were left where they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And they challenged the women of Fayetteville to take the lead in creating a Confederate cemetery.
They did.
And bringing as many Confederate dead as they could find and have disinterred and reburied to Fayetteville. And the result was the Confederate cemetery on East Mountain, where they will have the 140th Confederate Memorial Service tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The women that started the movement are still the women that are keeping the cemetery taken care of. Not the very same
no,
ones.
No, no, no. That would be impressive.
That would be impressive. But the Southern Memorial Association, all women, established the cemetery, and they brought more than 600 Confederate soldiers from Arkansas, Missouri, Texas, and Louisiana to be buried on what they called East Mountain. And now most of the members of the Southern Memorial Association are older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the younger folks are not so much joiners.
Right.
And now they begin to wonder what happens when they're gone. So they're hoping that this year's memorial service will bring people who are interested in stepping in and taking the care of the cemetery forward. And they're really not about North or South. It's simply that we've created this resting place, and just like Evergreen or any place else, we have to take care of it.
It's a beautiful spot. It's one of my favorite spots in Fayetteville, actually.
It is a beautiful spot.
You overlook the city. It's often quiet. When I've gone up there, I'm usually the only person there.
Lots of times you see kids doing homework,
mm-hmm.
people walking their dogs. The interesting thing is that Linda Doty, who I spoke to, who's been involved with Headquarters House and so many
right.
things in Fayetteville, said she spoke to a group of Boy Scouts who didn't even understand what the Civil War was about. And I don't mean in greater – Kyle and I just had a big debate about this. I don't mean in greater terms, but just the fact that it was – sometimes brother against brother,
right.
cousin against cousin, friends and family who ended up on different sides of a debate. Doesn't matter which side you come down on, it's still something that probably yeah. deserves some attention, just like Evergreen.
It's history.
It's history. 10 o'clock Saturday at the cemetery on Mount Sequoia, C.L. Gray, who is from Ohio, is going to speak. You can check out more about the Southern Memorial Association at rootsweb.ancestry.com, A-R-S-M-A. Also this weekend, the Through the Garden Gate tour is happening. Kind of sneaked up on us. It's from 9 to 4 tomorrow, rain or shine. It benefits the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas and the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. And it's 8, I believe, homes all in Benton County. No, because there's one in Elkins, all over Northwest Arkansas, and they have great gardens. And it's $15 for adults. You can find out more at 935-3068. There's this little music festival.
Yes.
Called Wakarusa.
Which at some point, I hope the weather cooperates enough at least where it's never dangerous.
I hope so, too. It's on Mulberry Mountain on the Pig Trail, if you've never heard of it. Headliners include Widespread Panic at 9:30 on Saturday and Snoop Lion, who's been promoted from being Snoop Dogg,
mm-hmm.
at 8:30 on Sunday. Two-day passes are $119, and a Sunday-only ticket is $59. And you can follow Kevin Kinder, the What's Up music writer, at NWA What's Up on Twitter, or his blog at nwatunedin.com, and he'll tell you everything you want to know if you can't get there.
And might be able to keep you up to date with if anything has been moved or postponed. Or
right, or rearranged
right.
because of weather. Or if they've moved the entire festival, yeah, you know, north and west somewhere.
Yeah.
This is Mudtown Days in Lowell. Seems appropriate.
Fitting,
they'll probably
yes.
get mud. That started at 5 tonight and continues through tomorrow with a parade at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Music on the Square starts this weekend in Kingston.
That's a great tradition.
If you're a history buff, you really need to take yourself out to Kingston and enjoy the beautiful drive. Brick Fields plays tonight at 7, and this will happen the last Friday of the month throughout the summer. And one of my favorite plays in the whole world is on stage at Fort Smith Little Theater.
Barefoot in the Park.
Barefoot in the Park. I think that no matter how much you love your partner, I think it speaks to couples always about expectations and realities and silly fights. But it's on at 8 o'clock tonight and 8 o'clock tomorrow night at Fort Smith Little Theater, 2 o'clock Sunday, and again Thursday through June 8th. And tickets are $10.
Bargain.
You can afford to go have this much fun.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Now, in between trips to Wakarusa, you were there
yes.
yesterday and last night.
I was there yesterday. It was interesting. We went down early afternoon. I guess we got there around 1:30 or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it took about an hour and a half to get in.
Because of the severe weather?
Mm-hmm. About the time we got there, a storm hit, and I guess they closed the gates. One of the guys that we talked to as we were trying to drive by and then were told to keep going was saying that they had to wait for the lightning to stop.
Mm.
And it didn't sound like any bands were playing or anything like that. But once we got in and checked in and everything, yes, a lot of the bands that were in the tents would play, but I noticed a lot of the bands, like, on the main stage were not playing. I was quite heartbroken when we showed up for Calexico, and they were there sound checking, and then after about 15 minutes, they promptly wrapped their instruments in plastic and went away.
Well, you don't want to lose your instruments, and
well,
you're up
no,
there with electricity.
I completely understand. I do, but what was heartbreaking about this is I just assumed that they just called the set. Well, I heard later in the day from one of our camping neighbors that they, when the sun came out for 20 minutes, they played like 5 songs. So quite sad about that.
Were you able to keep up to just how bad the weather was? Were you able to keep up with alerts about watches or warnings?
No, actually. Nobody's phones were working very well at all. I mean, it was you're in the bottom of, you know, underneath a mountain, basically,
right.
in a valley, and it was crazy cloud cover, and nobody could seem to get a signal. You could call and text, kind of, but internet wasn't working. They had Wi-Fi for media in the convention center, but that they couldn't get that to work. And so I knew when I drove back into town into Fayetteville last night, I hit Elkins and got all these alerts on my phone. But while I was there, couldn't get anything. We couldn't even pull up like apps and stuff. So we were mostly asking people in the connected world. They did try to do a good job of people on staff going out and saying, hey, we checked the radar, there's a storm coming in, you might want to get in your car instead of your tent, could have hail. And so the organizers were checking, and they were trying to let people know, and they were trying to close stages down, to keep everybody safe and that sort of thing. But
you had microphone and press pass in hand. You covered a couple of press conferences, and you put together some sound from this first day.
I did. In this, what you'll hear next, I talked to two students who had they were at their first Wakarusa, and then also some sounds from, what you'll first hear, some sounds from a press conference that included band members from Moon Taxi, Wicket the Instigator, and Zugma. And a couple of them had mentioned during the press conference, they've been Wakarusa before, that sort of thing. And so one of the things that I asked them was, what is different about playing an outdoor festival, and, what's something that you enjoy about that as opposed to, say, playing in a bar?
Two, any festival setting is just a small moment in time where you have the ability to play for a cross-section of people that might not know your music, so you get that one chance to, impress them and turn them on.
You've got fans from all over the country that might be seeing different kinds of bands. Like someone who knows Wicked or Zugma might know about Moon Taxi and vice versa. So there's a lot of crossbreeding of the fans. It's a really, it's a really positive thing for music.
The people that come to these shows, they're putting a lot of thought into it. It's not just like hopping in your car and going to a venue in your city. Like, people are making signs, and they're making costumes, and they're carpooling, and like they're really looking for like a next level experience. So I think the crowds here are amazing because they're trying to kind of take it, to the next level. It's not just a regular show. It's like they're really trying to be a part of something special. And so I love outdoor festivals, because the crowds, they're not playing around. They're coming here to get down. They're flashing and glowing and glittery, and they're ready to roll.
Hi, my name's Mallory Hiss. I'm from Collierville, Tennessee.
My name is David Coleman. I'm from Frisco, Texas.
First Waka trip.
Yes, very first Waka.
Well, I go to school up here, and it's a big say about around town to go to Wakarusa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The known music festival around here. Probably Umphrey's McGee, Snoop Lion, of Monsters and Men.
I'm looking forward to seeing some new bands.
If you get separated from your friends, you just meet at a band.
Exactly. We've been here for a couple hours. We weren't able to get in until maybe like 2 hours ago. They kept sending us around. We had to wait somewhere.
But the weather will not bring us down. We're in. We're set up, tents, everything. We're ready to go. I really want to meet everyone that goes here.
Yeah.
You're one of the people who is here. And then there's another person right over there who also came here. So it'd be cool to just meet a couple of people like that.
Fitting that you have rain ending this audio montage from the first day of Wakarusa. There's going to be more today, it looks like.
That's what I hear. Unfortunately, people were troopers. I did get to hear some music finally around 7 or 8. Finally, just said I'm going out there. Went out to some tents. If you're going down today or this weekend, you need rain boots. There's no way to get around. It was a complete. It's completely muddy. Like, it was up to almost my knees in some places.
Oh,
the water and the mud, and you can't move with that. I mean, anybody with shoes pretty much just took them off and went barefoot because it was a lot easier if you didn't have your rain boots. I totally suggest rain boots. I mean, I'm fortunate in that I had rain jacket, rain pants, rain boots. I was dry, so that was nice.
not a bad idea to have a weather alert radio to know whether you're getting just rain,
exactly.
A thunderstorm,
exactly.
Or something worse.
I may have to pick one of those up on the way down.
Battery operated.
But the Black Crowes did play Take the Main Stage around 9, and I think they were the headliners for the day, so they did get to play.
Okay.
So that was good.
Okay, well, be careful.
I will.
All right. Look forward to more reports next week.
Yes.
I'm Bob Garfield on this week's On the Media. An online troll abused a blogger for years, though his comments never saw the light of day.
His only audience was me. He was my private troll. Not just any old troll. He was like a shadow I had that nobody else could see.
Then one day, the blogger chatted up his nemesis. That story and more on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
On the Media, Sunday morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Thunder on the Mountain Country Music Festival is June 6th through the 8th at Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. This event features three stages, over 40 musical acts, camping, vendors, and more. Performers include Luke Bryan, Montgomery Gentry, Thompson Square, and others. Tickets and more information available at thunderonthemountain.com. And in just a few minutes, we'll select a winner of six tickets to the Thunder on the Mountain Festival. The warm weather months mean plenty of music in the area. Not only are there the large outdoor festivals, but smaller series like those in downtown Solemn Springs and around the square in Kingston, and in places like Gully Park in Fayetteville and Pinnacle Hills in Rogers. And Sunday afternoon, the Fayetteville Public Library brings back its free music series, the Mountain Street Music Series. Adams Collins kicks off the 2013 season. Recently, he returned to the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF to talk with Antoinette, and he began this visit with a song.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio is the Adams Collins Trio. Welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello.
And you guys were playing Blank Land. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a tune I wrote with the conception of when people talk about going to dreamland, and it's kind of the other side of that where you have dreamless sleep, really deep, nice sleep. It kind of sounds dreamlike, but you're not supposed to be thinking about anything when it's happening.
Now, I'm sure you have to think a lot about what's happening when you're on stage. You have a lot of different configurations, I suppose.
Yeah, we kind of have a family of 5 to 10 people, and we just, you know, we know each other's music and play on each other's gigs just because everybody's so busy with different projects. Garrett's in and out of town a lot, and, you know, we just, depending on the size of the venue and, you know, what it calls for, we hire out to, you know, just call whoever can be there.
Well, how often do you get to play as a trio?
Pretty regularly.
Pretty often, yeah.
We have a weekly gig at the Arcegas Depot on Wednesday nights, mm-hmm. And we always have a trio down there.
7 to 10.
7 to 10, and we just started playing out on the porch, and it's really nice. So it's nice. We get to play together every week, and, you know, that's a regular gig, and then plus on the weekends, you know, different stuff comes up. So we've been doing it since November, and it's been great to develop musical relationships, you know, like where it's not just about trying to play the composition correctly anymore, but we can actually have dialogue between us, you know.
Therefore not thinking as much.
Right, exactly. And, yeah, it's been fun to have the music grow over the past 6 months or so.
How is it different for you guys playing, you know, in the smaller configuration as with instead of up to 10 people?
It's nice because it's more transparent. Every note counts a lot more. And, you know, you can really get into the subtleties and the interaction. It's great playing with big group, too, because you can have a lot more force, a lot more power of sound, and you can do more interesting things with orchestration and arrangement. But playing in the smaller group is fun just for the interaction and the transparency, and you have more opportunity to let the music kind of guide you into places that...
Get a lot more room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I didn't know existed until we arrived there.
Right.
As far as the trio is a smaller configuration, so does that mean that you typically play in smaller venues as opposed to, say, a bar?
Not necessarily, but no. Yeah.
So, yeah. Space is always a concern when you get gigs, especially around here, because you get restaurants sometimes or coffee shops.
House parties.
Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a small space... You can only bring so many people.
Sure.
You don't want to crowd out the patrons.
Right. So.
Well, I didn't know.
Or volume as well.
Right.
As a trio, if you're trying to book gigs, if, you know, say a bar is less likely to hire you because, you know, people maybe not come to pay attention to that and you're more like background music. Does that make sense? And so it's easier for you to get a gig as a trio in a restaurant?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Right. Working as a jazz musician is interesting because we do get hired a lot. We call them like wallpaper gigs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like the first gigs that I was playing was at Pinnacle Hills Country Club about like 10 years ago or something.
I just love that gig though, because like I say though, even though it's a wallpaper gig, you'd really be surprised by the number of patrons who genuinely listen to it as well, though, a lot of times. So, I mean, you do the restaurant gigs, and, yeah, most of the people, it's just background noise, but then you'll wind up with, like, a handful of people that really genuinely enjoy that. I remember playing at Pinnacle. There's always one patron in particular that I always remember coming up, and he just would love it every week and would tip us out really good and everything. So when we were up there playing John years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know who. You're still always playing for somebody. That's what you got to keep in mind, even when you're doing those restaurant gigs. There's still somebody out there that's genuinely, like, involved and listening and is excited about what's happening. So it's one of those, it's easy to try and like get off in your own little world where you think you're not maybe as important, but in all truth, there's always somebody out there that really genuinely is happy and appreciative that this art form still alive and still going, and they actually listen to the music and know the vocabulary, so you better be on your A game.
Yeah.
That makes it worthwhile.
Exactly. Sure. So.
Yep.
Well, should mention the reason you're here is because you're opening up the Mountain Street Stage Concert Series June 2nd across the street here from us at the studio at the Fayetteville Public Library. Now, there you guys are the main attraction, so people are coming to see you. So does that make it different?
You could be rock stars for the day.
Right. Yeah, it's cool because we can really get into some original music and, you know, help talk about the pieces. And, yeah, it's just... when you have an attentive audience, it's more inspiring to to really, you know, draw energy off the people and how they're reacting to what you're playing.
I love it, people dancing. I was playing a wedding like two nights ago, and like it's people don't dance to jazz very much anymore, but every now and then you'll get this, like, this rare group of people that are like know how to dance, know how to like do salsa dancing and things or swing dance, and it really is. It draws inspiration. You're like, you start feeding off these people, and it just puts a big smile on everybody's face, like guaranteed across the board whenever people start doing that. So,
or hula hooping.
Hula hooping is great as well. So, whatever you need to get into.
Now, when you guys are the main performers, like you'll be at the library, do you feel like you have to say things in between songs? Because, you know, bands always talk in between different songs and stuff like that. And you don't have to do that when you're at a restaurant. So, I mean, do you have pithy stories in between that you're planning on telling?
Yeah, trying to be witty.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that I think about, you know, and especially for a gig like the library where I know it'll be kind of a feature showcase. You know, people want to be entertained. Our job is an entertainer. And music is its own language, and we're very familiar with it, but other people maybe not so much, so we have to use our human language, you know, to help communicate some of the ideas and help draw people in.
Music, I mean, the best songs, in my opinion, have always been a storytelling art of some sort or fashion anyway, so it's sometimes nice. It goes back to, I mean, you're a world traveler, but divulging what stories are involved with the individual tunes, it really will draws people in, being able to tell them, well, this is where this comes from, this is what's going on. And like I say, Adams is full of great stories, so as are his compositions. So that's the joy part about it, is trying to find the stories that match up with all this. And for sure, I mean, these are instrumental pieces, so there's a musical language going on with it, but the storytelling still there. So
I always try and brush up on a few jokes too, in case I freeze up.
Brown, like, chicken, brown cow is your
what
favorite.
What you got? Skeleton walks into a bar and he orders a beer and a mop.
Wah, wah.
That works. I like it. That'll work. Do you guys have
that one and more?
And more. So something to look forward to there. Do you guys have your set list ready yet, or do you just do you do set lists?
It'll probably. We don't usually do set list,
but we got a set of songs, you know, it's getting ready to happen. So it's just, but you read people, read the audiences, and see where things need to go. And it's like this morning waking up, we were trying to get up and around because we're musicians playing all day. So just like, let's, like, Johnny's wanting to start off with like up tempo things. He's full of energy, and I'm like,
too much coffee.
I'm out of bed. Yeah, I haven't had breakfast yet. So let's chill out and do Blank Land or something. It's a little more subdued.
Well, it sounded good. And if you're welcome. So if people want to come see you live, you will be at the Mountain Street Stage Concert at the Fayetteville Public Library June 2nd from 2 to 4. Admission is free. And people can find out more information about that at faylib.org. And they can find out more information about you guys where?
AdamsCollins.com.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Everett.
Adams Collins, Garrett Jones, and Johnny Arrendato, they are the Adams Collins Trio, and they will launch the Mountain Street Stage Music Series at the Fayetteville Public Library Sunday afternoon. There's a little bit more from that conversation that you can hear as an audio extra at OzarksAtLarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ian Sonecker-Hayda.
And as has been our custom on Fridays in May, we've walked down the hall to Rhonda Dillard's office.
But Rhonda isn't here today.
Rhonda is trying to stay dry at Wakarusa, last report. So Molly is here. Yes. Molly Ron.
I am the new Rhonda. Okay, so we today are giving away a 6-pack of tickets to Thunder on the Mountain, which I believe is on Mulberry Mountain. It is a country music festival happening next weekend, I believe. Is that correct? And we have a winner. I'm going to draw for a winner whenever you're ready.
Let's go.
Okay. Okay, and our winner is John Adair of Bella Vista. Congratulations, John. I will be sending you an email letting you know that you have won.
All right, so that wraps up these giveaways for May. I'm sure we'll have some more as the warm weather months continue. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Patrick.
Ah, Patrick.
Uh-huh. It's not all the way back to town.
Yeah. Yes. Sunday I'll be with Christina for Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9. She's got the Monday show by herself. Then the two of you for like the next 2 weeks.
Right, because you're going to Iceland.
I am going to Iceland.
Very excited for you.
I'm very excited. It's a trip I've been waiting to do for more than 20 years.
Yeah, so this is a great time to do it.
Yes, so it was a birthday gift for my wife, so I'm off to Reykjavik this weekend.
I'm very excited. I want a full report when you get back.
Oh, you'll get a full report. It's called
More
Report.
Than I asked
yes,
for.
It will last the next 25 years.
Okay, good.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks to you, Tim, Jackie, Christina, Katie, for allowing me to be able to do this.
Of course.
I appreciate it very much.
Bon voyage. Safe travels.
All right. You be safe today as well.
Of course.